Story hits it high and deep right field. Way back and gone! Three-run bomb. Welcome to the big leagues, Trevor Story. And this ball's hit a long way to left. Take a good look. You won't see this one for long. You want to talk about a debut?
For strikeout.
High and deep left field. The legend grows larger. Story drives this to deep left field again. And this one's gone. Unbelievable. This ball's hit to deep left field. Take a good look. You won't see it for long. Story time.
It's just crazy. It's just surreal.
What's the difference between partying and being out of control?
Yeah, cool. I'm not drunk.
The Warriors have tied the record for most wins in a season.
The all-new edition of the Sportsbook Podcast with Brad and Clay on the TIRN Sports. Coming up on today's show, we have a lot to get to with the Golden State Warriors tying the Chicago Bulls record. Trevor Story is a rookie who's on a tear right now in the Major League Baseball. He's hit 7 home runs in his first 6 games. We'll get to that as well. Johnny Manziel is Johnny Hobo at the moment. And we're getting closer and closer to the NBA playoffs coming up soon. We'll have our matchups tonight and tomorrow. And the playoffs get underway this weekend. I want to welcome into the show my co-host, as always, Clay Schwader. Clay, what's going on, buddy?
I've been doing better if my internet was working, but I guess I'll just have to be like a Marine, you know, adapt and overcome.
You know, who needs internet anyway when you're so smart like Clay Schwader is?
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll do my best.
So, Clay, we have a lot to get to. The Golden State Warriors have at least matched the record by the 95-96 Bulls with their 72nd win over the San Antonio Spurs, handing them their first loss at home all season, snapping their 48-game home winning streak. And a lot of news going on in the NBA. Sam Hinkie, a lot of people know who this guy is in the league and around the NBA. He's famous for his tanking tactic, better draft picks, and to hope his team gets better in about 20 years. He has stepped down as GM and president of basketball operations in Philadelphia.
Well, kind of surprising, but at the same time, he wasn't really doing a great job. I don't think many Sixers fans are upset about that.
Well, there's a lot. I did a lot of research on this, listened to a lot of podcasts, a lot of articles this week. Got to know a little bit more about Sam Hinkie. It's not as dark and gloomy as it seems. He's actually a pretty smart guy, and this is just a tactic that is going to take longer than 3 years, which is all he had with the 76ers. So we'll get to Sam Hinkie's decision to step down, who's going to replace him in Philadelphia, and going forward, what they're going to look like maybe this summer when the free agency, the cap opens back up for $20 more million, and they have draft picks coming in. They could have 2 at the top 5.
It'd be a completely different roster, you're right.
Things may not be as gloomy as it seems right now in Philadelphia in the next 2 years. I'm not saying they're going to win 60 games and go to the playoffs every year. However, I do think they're going to be a lot better than they were this year. We have the NBA playoffs coming up this weekend. We'll look ahead at the matchups. We have some shuffling going on in the Eastern Conference. We have our team set. It's just a matter of who's going to play who this weekend when it all tips off. Jordan Spieth, this guy was on his way to winning his second consecutive green jacket at the Masters. A quadruple bogey on the 12th hole cost his chance to win and opens the door for Denny Willett to win his first jacket. And we have a lot more to get to, along as well as Kobe Bryant's last game tomorrow night. It's going to be interesting to see. Would you rather watch Kobe Bryant's last game or Golden State go for 73?
Oh, definitely Golden State. Come on. No, I mean, who's the Lakers even playing? That's probably, I mean, it's not going to be a game that has any. I'm not too into Kobe for a little bit, you know, maybe the first 5 or 10 minutes or so just to pay my dues. But if I'm going to have to watch a whole game, I'm going to try and watch Golden State, you know, break their record.
Well, Kobe's last game is going to be tomorrow night, actually going on at the same time as Golden State's game. Both tipping off late at 10:30.
Oh, wow.
Kobe's last game will be at home in Staples Center against the Utah Jazz, who, by the way, are fighting for that final spot in the Western Conference. They need a big win. This was the team that the Lakers lost to by 48 just a few weeks ago. So you got to think Utah is going to feel good going into this game, even though it's Kobe's last show.
Yeah, Utah needs to win to secure a playoff. Are they already... Have they already locked their spot in?
No, Utah's right now, I think they're a half game out behind Houston.
Wow, okay.
They're fighting for that last spot, and they both have games coming up tomorrow, and it's going to decide who gets in and who gets out.
I thought they were a good game or two ahead of Houston, but okay.
No, they've actually lost the last two games, and Houston's decided they want to win a game or two, and now they've jumped back into the race.
Yeah, if Houston would ever just decide they want to start playing, you know, they could be a pretty decent team.
It's gonna come down to tomorrow's matchups. Sacramento will take on the Rockets, and the Jazz will, of course, take on Los Angeles Lakers. So it's going to come down to tomorrow's game, as well as many other matchups that have a lot on the line when it comes to the final game of the regular season. Two teams who were, you know, fighting their neck and neck for the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth spot in the East. The Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat will face each other, and the winner of that will get the highest of those seeds, probably the four seed if the Hawks can win their game against the Washington Wizards. That'll put the Celtics or the Heat at four, and then the Charlotte Hornets have a chance to jump ahead of one of those teams if they get a chance to win over the Orlando Magic tomorrow in their final game. So there's a lot still left to be decided. We do have our teams for the playoffs in the East, just some of the filing and how it's going to be headed into this weekend.
Interesting, especially in the East. As you mentioned, all those teams jumbled up together. So they're all going to be playing each other, like you said, but I'm not sure where at exactly yet.
So, Clay, I want to go ahead and jump into the Golden State Warriors. They had two really tough games over the past weekend. They had to really fight and struggle and grind one out in the grindhouse against the Memphis Grizzlies, who are desperately undermanned. And they almost get away with a win there, but Warriors sneak out with a one-point win to win 71. And then on the second night of a back-to-back, they go into San Antonio, hand them their first loss of at home all season, and pick up win number 72.
Yeah, I was a little... I mean, you got to say you're impressed with that win. I was a little surprised. Not really, but, you know, considering that it seems like San Antonio just beat them there just what, a week or two ago, that was surprising in a way. But, you know, Golden State had to win if they wanted to get their record, obviously. And, you know, they played like they wanted to win. It had a kind of a playoff feel to it to me.
Absolutely. And then, Clay, what's really interesting is all year long, all I've been talking about is Golden State, can they get the record? Can they beat the Bulls? Will they be able to reach 73 wins? And it's all going to come down to the final game of the regular season tomorrow night when they take on the Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah, they just played them, and now they're going to chance to end the season at home, possibly with a win and the 73rd win of the season.
This is kind of off topic, but I don't really like how the NBA does that a lot. You know, they'll schedule a team, they'll play a team, and then a week later they'll play that same team. You know, but it's almost like they're at a home and home or something. You know, it's kind of weird.
Well, the last four games of the regular season for the Warriors were Spurs, Grizzlies, Spurs, Grizzlies.
Yeah, I don't get it, but maybe it's just easy for scheduling, I guess. Purposes. I'm sure they don't have an easy job, but yeah, it'll be interesting. Undermanned Grizzly team, you know, they're in the playoffs. They really have nothing to play for. I mean, they might can move up or down in the seedings. I don't know if they really can. I think they're set in at the sixth spot, if I'm not mistaken. So it'll be interesting to see how they play. You know, will Grizzly, you know, I hope they don't just back down and let Memphis and let Golden State, you know, roll all over them. You obviously don't want to see that. I want Golden State to have to kind of earn the win, I guess. Earn the record, I guess you could say. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. And Golden State, you know, obviously knows that they can't take them lightly. I think Golden State will be ready to play. And I think Golden State will probably, you know, win pretty convincingly. I don't think it'll be just an absolute blowout, but... I think it'd be a pretty good win. Hey, my internet just came back on.
All right, internet, woo! So, Clay, let me ask you this. If they lose somehow to the Grizzlies at home in Golden State,
yeah,
and they just have 72 wins, how do we look at this season compared to 95-96 season? And as a whole for this season, how are we looking at the Warriors with 72 wins instead of 73?
That's a good question. It'd be interesting. I think everybody will still say that Bulls team was the better of the two, maybe the best of all time. You know, obviously what happens in the playoffs is more paramount to me, in my opinion, I think it is to the Warriors too. I mean, what if they, you know, what if they win 73 games and then lose in the second round of the playoffs or lose in the conference finals? I mean, you know, then it'll be a disappointing season. But yeah, to get this close, and then if they lose to an undermanned Grizzly team, that's not something to play for. Now I'm looking at the standings.
Yeah, they could lose that sixth spot.
Yeah, they could move down to the seventh spot. You're right. So yeah, so they're going to be playing with something to lose, something to gain. But to lose to a team that's 2-8 in their last 10 games, it's without their best player at home. It would be a tough loss for sure. It wouldn't be looked upon as a disappointing season. They won 72 games, but it would leave a little bit of a bitter taste in their mouth, I would think.
Let me ask you this: you know, without it being on the shoulders of the players, let's say, you know, Steve Kerr decides not to play his guys all the minutes, and he gives it kind of like what he did this past weekend against the Grizzlies. We saw a lot of bench play where he really put it on his guys from the bench to step up in the spotlight to get that record. What if he decides not to play Stephen Curry that many minutes, Draymond Green, Iguodala, Klay Thompson? What if he decides to go with the bench more, and then if they lose, is it good or bad, or do we hate on Steve Kerr for the record, or what?
It's an interesting dilemma for sure. I think he's going to, if they get a comfortable lead, you know, he'd be willing to do that. But I think if it's a close back and forth game from start to finish, I think his starters are going to play their regular minutes. I think they hold this record.
It's interesting because Steve Kerr holds all the cards. He's a guy who was a part of that Bulls team, who had that 72-win record. Now he's coached the team who has 72 wins to tie that team he was on.
Yeah.
And he could possibly coach the team to break his record or decide to rest these guys, stay tied with that record, and then look ahead to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma. I mean, what if somebody gets hurt? What if Curry gets hurt, or what if Iguodala even, or somebody like that gets hurt? Yeah, it's an interesting – you know, it's interesting. If it was football, I think they'd probably rest their starters. I really do. But I think with it being basketball, you know, not as much of a chance as injury. But that's a good point. I think he'll get his starters out as quickly as possible. I will say that. If they get a comfortable lead, he's gonna see if his bench players can sustain the lead, I think.
Well, we know how his Western Conference foe at coach would handle this. Greg Popovich, he wouldn't play a single player in that starting lineup.
You're right about that. Yes,
it would be Patty Mills, Boris Diaw, those guys going out there fighting for 73.
Hey, Diaw's pretty good.
He's going to be key in the playoffs.
Boris Diaw, I remember he was drafted by Atlanta back in the day. Seems like that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I think he was a guy who, you know, he went to a couple teams he didn't like playing for. He gained a lot of weight and decided he's not going to be what he possibly could, you know, what his potential was being. Then Greg Popovich saw that, a guy, of course, who loves to go out and draft guys from Europe, which is what Boris Diaw is from France.
And, right.
He's just a guy who was put in the right system at the right time for just enough money and just one of those cog pieces in the system that keeps going each and every year.
Oh, yeah. He just does his job.
So, Clay, I found this fascinating. I know a lot of people think it's boring and they look past it and everything, but when Sam Hinkie of the Philadelphia 76ers stepped down as GM and president of basketball operations, it opened up my eyes a little bit to what was going on behind the scenes of this story ever since going back to December. You know, this was a guy who decided to take the approach of tanking, which is basically – you know, losing as many games. He's going to say a couple times that he did not, you know, tell his players to lose games. But however, when you have a roster like this where you mix it up and you don't have the same people on the team that started the season, then, you know, you're not putting them in a great position to win games. And it's all about stockpiling draft picks. They've done that. They've gone after Joel Okafor, Joel Embiid. And then they have a guy overseas as well, Nerlens Noel. They got a few guys stockpiled up, but at the same time, you know, Embiid hasn't played in 2 years since he's been drafted. The guy overseas is still overseas, has not had a chance to come back yet. So all of his draft picks, of course, haven't panned out. They've missed on some key guys that you know, that's really could have made this thing work.
And that's the key. He's missed on some guys, and who knows if how do you say his name from Kansas? You just said it,
Joel Embiid.
Yeah, who knows if he'll ever? I don't even know if he's ever going to play. I mean, has he played a game since he's been drafted? I mean,
no.
Yeah, just to have a guy like that to miss that badly on a key lottery pick, you know, it's just. You know, patience is going to go so far in sports. Excuse me, and you know, this 1-10 games, missing on draft picks. I don't. Like I said earlier, I don't think many Sixers fans are losing any sleep.
So, the story all really begins the downfall of Sam Hinkie, him deciding to resign, really starts in December. When the Philadelphia 76ers decide to go out and hire Jerry Colangelo, the guy who runs Team USA with Coach K, each and every year, getting all these things ready for the Olympics, they sign him in December to be chairman of basketball operations. And this is when Sam Hinkie began to be doomed.
Did they think they could get some big-time free agents that played on that Team USA team or something?
Well, you know what? I'm glad you asked that, because yesterday the NBA had sit down basically a memo, if you will, to Jerry Colangelo saying, and really limiting his abilities as chairman of team basketball to go out and recruit these star players to Philadelphia. He said, you can't be doing both, okay? Yes, you can be chairman, and you can be chairman of team basketball, but you can't be persuading team members of Team USA to join the Philadelphia 76ers. That's part of tampering, as many head coaches and GMs well are aware of in the league. So they're limiting his abilities as Team USA chairman because he is a part of an NBA affiliate team.
So we can't really do much.
Right. When it comes to when it comes to talking to players who are under contract with other teams about their persuading to join Philadelphia.
Yeah, okay.
And for several weeks and months, really, Sixers ownership, Colangelo and Sam Hinkie has discussed different scenarios of front office partnerships, and Colangelo had convinced ownership that it needed more basketball savvy executive with better interpersonal skills. That's one big thing a lot of people hated on Hinkie about, was he's not a guy who was personable with other GMs and of other teams in the league and of the media as well. He wasn't available enough to talk to the media when they needed him to, which was really fascinating to me because, Clay, you know, we were talking about this last week on the show. The 76ers had 9 wins. They had a game against the Pelicans last week, and we didn't know if they were going to win 10 or not. That was kind of our bet when we were leaving the show, was with the 76ers win 10 games. They did that night. But that day before our show, Clay, Sam Hinkie was actually on a podcast with ESPN's Zach Lowe, and you would think nothing about him resigning, which he did the very next day. All this is kind of odd timing, if you ask me.
So he said, "I'm staying." 24 hours later, he's out the door.
He's talking a podcast about an hour and a half long too, about developing draft picks and what it takes to really, you know, what's it like in the draft room and to choose this approach of building a basketball team. And what's funny, what makes it even more interesting is when he did resign the day after, he actually released a 13-page letter to other GMs, which wasn't supposed to be leaked, but it had been, and a lot of people read it around the circles of the NBA. And I don't think you write 13-page resignation letters in one night. So this is a guy who probably had this plan for a few weeks and decided it was just time to go.
Blowing some steam the night before, or just blowing some smoke the night before, I suppose.
It sounded to me, I listened to the whole podcast, it sounded great. It sounded like he was giving really good answers and is actually a pretty smart guy. A lot of people kind of hate on his approach, but if you listen to the way he talked about it, he's actually a pretty smart guy. And I do think he does get picked up somewhere, not as a head of an organization like he had, like how much control he had with the 76ers, but maybe he can go back to Houston when he was working with Daryl Morey. And he could be an assistant under him. They're really tight friends, and that may be something that happens down the line.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, he's made plenty of friends in the business. I'm sure he'll get some job in a position, like you mentioned, not a general manager position, but obviously some kind of director, player personnel, or whatever, you know, something of operations or whatever, you know, scouting, some kind of scouting development or something. He'll definitely get a good job.
You know, and one of our best friends here on the show was Patrick McCarver, Clay, and he had a really, really cool input on who he thinks should jump into the new GM role. He said, you know, who better than the new Hall of Famer, Allen Iverson?
I don't know. You think he's qualified?
They have approached him at times about having some sort of management role, and he's mentioned it a time here and there.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. However, they already have announced the new name for the new GM and president of basketball operations as Jerry Colangelo's son, Brian Colangelo. This name could sound familiar for many NBA guys because this was a guy who's had two jobs in the front office of organizations, once with the Phoenix Suns and with the Toronto Raptors later on down the line, in which he both, in those jobs, had won NBA Executive of the Year. And this had happened when he was in Phoenix. He was the guy that was responsible for signing Steve Nash. He drafted Amari Stoudemire and assembled the cast of coaches around Mike D'Antoni. And then when he went to Toronto, he was the guy that ended up drafting and re-signing DeMar DeRozan to a big contract. He traded for Kyle Lowry, and he hired coach Dwayne Casey, who's there now. And then, as you can see, it's turned out pretty good for the organization, even though he's not there still now. So this is a guy who has a very smart basketball IQ. He knows how to handle organizations and teams and picks. He's a very smart basketball-minded guy. Only thing is he's going into that. He actually had interviewed for the Brooklyn Nets, almost New Jersey Nets, Brooklyn Nets job that was opened a few months ago that was then filled by Sean Marks, former Spurs assistant. But he only reason why he was hesitant to take the 76ers job was because of his father, and he didn't like the whole nepotism thing. He didn't want people thinking that he needed his father to give him a job. However, if you look around the league, this was the best name out there to go out and hire a guy to be your new GM.
And he had a pretty good, as you mentioned, he had a pretty good run with Toronto. He's had a couple of years to kind of sit back and learn. I think it does people good. It does general manager type guys good. It even does, I think, coaches good to sit back and learn. You know, a lot of times you see these coaches on, you know, they work for ESPN for a year or two, then they get back into basketball or back into coaching, excuse me. And he's had a couple of years off the court. Maybe he'll do him some good. He did have a real good years, done a lot of good things, as you said.
And what's really interesting is you look at it, and the future for the 76ers is actually looking up, because not only with new management now, with the Colangelos running ship there in Philadelphia, which is two of the, you know, smart NBA guys that you want. I mean, it's actually the best thing that could happen to 76ers, getting Brian Colangelo, a guy who was going to be added in anyway. They actually had interviewed Danny Ferry to come in and help Sam Hinkie. They wanted to keep Sam Hinkie in office, but just add someone to help him, not give him as much control. Sam didn't like that, decided to step aside, and then went with Brian Colangelo, who's a really smart guy, as we mentioned. He's going to have a ton of picks going on in the next 2 years, two possibly in the top five this year. They have a ton of money, of course, to go out and sign possible free agents. We know how big the pool is going to be in the next 2 years. So we could be looking at a team, Clay, who could be on the edge of making the playoffs in the next 3 to 4 years.
It's possible. They got a lot of work to do, but as you mentioned, with the free agency, all the money they're going to have, you know, they're obviously going to have a lottery draft pick. Yeah, they can definitely turn things around. It takes time. I remember the Atlanta, they had a year where they only won 13 games. And I think 2 or 3 years after that, you know, they made the playoffs and took the Boston Celtics to 7 games in the first round. I don't know if you remember that. I'm sure you do. It wasn't that long ago. Anything's possible. And now look, Atlanta, they've made the playoffs every year since then. It's been like 8 years in a row. So, you know, things can change very quickly in sports.
That's right. So a lot of things up on the horizon. I do think Sam gets another job, possibly with Houston. And I cannot wait to see what Brian and his father Jerry can do in Philadelphia. It's going to be interesting to see. Cause, you know, as me, Clay, you going back to 2000s when Allen Iverson was there, I was a big 76ers fan.
Right.
Of course, since then, I've jumped ship.
Yeah, since they went away from the black uniforms, things just happened.
Yeah. Even though it does look pretty cool going back to the retro 70s jersey.
Yeah. It is pretty nice. We don't have to change the court, you know, when Villanova plays there. They just kind of leave it all the same.
Yeah.
It is pretty nice.
But I'm talking about 76ers with Allen Iverson, Eric Snow, Derek Coleman, Keith Van Horn. Those are my guys, man. Eric McKee. Those are my guys.
Oh, Willie Green. Willie Green.
He played for the Hawks and was pretty good coming off the bench.
Yeah,
I miss those guys. I miss like the early 2000 to 2005 NBA. That was perfect.
Had the Kimbe Mutombo for a while, didn't they?
They did. Todd McCulloch. I mean, I can name almost every player on that team, and that's been 16 years.
Of course, Larry Brown was the coach. Before Larry Brown was there, they had another good coach.
I think Fratello was there one time.
Yeah. I can't think of his name, but yeah. Obviously, Larry Brown, you know. Had some good years.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. 76ers back in the day.
Oh.
So, guys, coming up next, we have a lot more to get to you guys about the Masters. Trevor Story's crazy rookie season getting underway in his first six games. Kobe Bryant's last game and much more coming up on the second half here of the Sports Report with Brad and Clay. We'll see you on the break. The Sports Support Podcast with Brad and Clay here on TRN Sports. You can check out replays of all of our shows on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Audioboom. Make sure to go over to our Facebook page and like us there, The Sports Support, and on Twitter at TIR Sports Support. So, Clay, we had a pretty historic Sunday at the Masters. It all happened in Augusta, Georgia, of course. The site and the big stage for what is the PGA Golf Tour. Jack Nicklaus, one of the great golfers of all time, once called it the most dangerous par 3 in the game, and Jordan Spieth discovered that the hard way on Sunday, and it cost him another green jacket. Seemingly cruising to a second straight green jacket at Augusta, Spieth knocked down two balls in Ray's Creek in front of par 3 12th hole and saw a one-shot lead turn into a three-shot deficit after he quadrupled bogeyed the 12th hole.
Quadruple. Yeah, I thought I was watching Tiger Woods for a minute.
Spieth finished tied for a second with Lee Westwood, three shots back of the champion, Englishman number 12 in the world, Danny Willett, who posted a final score of 67 and a bogey-free 5-under. So, Clay, let me ask you this. The big picture is, how will this impact Spieth going forward? And how much does it hurt him going into this whole, you know, another year long getting back into Augusta? How's it going to carry over with him for another year?
It's kind of hurt, but at the same time, I think he could maybe use it as motivation. I mean, that image of him putting on the, putting the jacket on to Wilt, you know,
that's never fun.
How they put the jacket on the new winners, you know, he had to put it on him. Man, that had to hurt. And I think that's going to be embedded in his mind for probably the rest of his life, but it'll definitely fuel him, you know, I think he can use it in a positive way.
What's funny thing about this is Danny Willett, the guy who ends up winning the Masters, he wasn't, you know, about 10 days before, he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to participate this year in the Masters. And so his wife gave birth to their first child premature and gives him just enough time a week prior to the tournament. And that gave him just enough time to enter and get his feet wet into the tournament and eventually walk away with a green jacket.
He's got a horseshoe or something. He's had some good luck. That is pretty crazy.
Perhaps the most notorious Masters meltdown, of course, going back to Greg Norman's 1996, when he had squandered a six-shot advantage, and he also found the water in on hole number 12, and he lost that one to Nick Faldo, who was the first Englishman to win it, making Willett the second this year.
That's interesting.
Pretty interesting story. It felt like to me going into this weekend, all you heard was Spieth is going to set some records. Here he is with a five-shot lead. He's only got a few holes to go. It seemed pretty comfortable. He was going to cruise into another green jacket, and unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. And but the good thing is a lot of people, they know what a good guy Jordan Spieth is, and they're really paying attention to how he handled the loss, and which shows a lot more about him than in his character than just his play.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, he seems to have a good head about him. I think that's one reason why he's going to respond positively to this.
So, Clay, another crazy thing that's going on in the first week of the Major League Baseball season is, you know, going back to last year when the Colorado Rockies had Troy Tulowitzki, a guy who's been the face of that franchise for quite some time, hitting home runs, you know, being the all-star for them. He ends up going to Toronto last year in a late trade, making a big push for the playoffs. So they wonder how they're going to fill that gap. Well, they may have found their answer. When Trevor Story, a rookie who, through his first six games of his career, has had seven home runs, Clay.
That's crazy. Has that ever happened before?
First one. That seven has not. Six has by a couple of pretty star guys. Trying to find that for you real quick.
At home run nearly every game except for one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, here it is right here. He has seven home runs, the first time that's happened. Six home runs in six games. That's happened three times. Larry Walker had six in 1997, Mike Schmidt 1976, and your boy Willie Mays in 1964.
Wow, that's a pretty good company. That's a really good company. Every one of those guys.
What's funny is going back to his very first at bat, and his first hit, first at bat, is against Zach Greinke, and it's a home run.
Yeah.
He actually hits two home runs in his debut, his first game. He hits two home runs in back-to-back innings. They had a big push on the D-backs in that game, and he gets away with a home run in the third and the fourth inning.
It's crazy to have two homers, four RBI, one game. A lot of some players don't get that all year.
Meanwhile, in Atlanta.
Oh, he missed. There was a lot of commitment in the game, too. He made them count.
Do you think, in Atlanta, Clay, 0-6 Braves, we saw this coming. Let me ask you this, Clay.
Are we going to play that game?
Not today. I don't have any of the names lined up right now. But let me ask you this. Have you watched the game yet?
I tuned in, but I haven't watched a full game from start to end. I watched a little bit of the first game when they blew it. But I've just tuned in to bits and pieces. The other night they were getting beat bad, so I didn't watch much of it. But no, I haven't watched the whole game.
Me neither.
I've already gave up on the year. I don't know.
Yeah, didn't have a lot of hope and optimism going into the season, and I don't feel great about it now. Maybe they'll find their way, you know. What is it, 156-6 maybe? Can they go that way?
I did catch they were getting beat pretty bad the other night, but that there was a pitcher that – let me see if I can find his name. If I see his name – it'll ring a bell.
John Smoltz.
No,
Tom Glavine.
It was like Ben Gann or something like that.
Ben Dan.
G-A-N-N, I thought. Oh. But anyways, his delivery, he steps to the plate, but he doesn't throw it.
Oh, for the Braves?
Yeah,
I saw that video.
You know, take a step, and stop. And then he'll throw. It's weird. It's like he balks, but it's not technically a balk because he does the same thing every time.
That's weird. When I watched it, I thought it was a balk. I mean, how?
Yeah.
It looks exactly. It's awful, and it's throwing batters off their rhythm, really.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I would be up there flinching because it looks like he's about to throw the ball and he just stops. And then he winds back up and throws it. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
You know what? Whatever works.
He did pretty good. Nobody. I kept waiting to see how it would work from the stretch. You know, because you can't do that. You know, with somebody on base, obviously. But nobody ever got on base that I saw. But I didn't watch very much of that. I think I watched the inning. I think he pitched the inning. Nobody got on base from what I remember. But yeah, I want to see how he pitches from the stretch. I guess he just doesn't do that first little stop move there. I don't know. It was weird.
Just real
like a foul. It's like a free throw to me. They just get their. They just do their thing, and they do the same thing every
it's
time. You know?
Basically, for people who haven't seen it, you know, going to basketball, it's like if he were to shoot free throw. And throws it straight up in the air, then catches it, then shoots it.
Pretty much.
Basically what it is.
Or you put it up above your head and pump fake, and then you do it. I don't know.
It's weird.
It was really weird.
So, Clay, I want to go ahead and get to some more of the NBA real quick. We're getting close to the NBA playoffs that start actually this weekend. The first matchups get underway.
Right.
And I want to take a look real quick, Clay, at some of the teams who are fighting for some spots in the East.
All
right. As of right now, it's a fight for the 3-6 seed in the East. You have the Atlanta Hawks, half game up on the Heat. And then a half game behind them is the Celtics and the Hornets. All four teams are in action tomorrow night. The Heat are actually in action tonight, taking on the Pistons, who, by the way, are clinched into the playoffs this year. And if they win, Pacers lose tomorrow, the Pistons will slide into the 7th seed and the Pacers drop down to the 8th.
And the Pistons, that's not, I wouldn't want to face that team in the first round, I'll be honest with you.
Me neither. So I'm looking at Clay and the Celtics and the Heat, who could possibly play each other in the first round of the playoffs, meet in the last game of the regular season tomorrow night on ESPN.
Yeah.
How do you see this East figuring itself out before this weekend?
Man, that's a good question. I know if Atlanta would have won out, they would have the 3 spot, but they lost last night to Cleveland, so I don't know if Atlanta can still get that. I mean, if the Heat went out and the Hawks went out, would the Heat have the 3 spot, or would Atlanta still...
The Hawks would have it.
The Hawks would still have it, okay.
Yeah,
I think Atlanta... I have to pull up everybody's schedule. That's tough.
Well, just looking at it right here, all the Hawks have left is one game tomorrow against the Wizards. And the Heat have a game tonight against the Pistons and tomorrow against the Celtics.
That's tough.
And that's pretty much it because the rest of the teams, they play, you know, the Hornets play the Magic tomorrow for the last game. So it's basically all we have left is two games, one for most.
So the Hawks are playing the Wizards. It is on the road, but it's against a team that's not going to the playoffs. So I think Atlanta will take care of business. The Heat and the Celtics, that's going to be tough for Miami to win. To win both those games. So I think Atlanta will probably finish with the 3rd spot, and I think Boston will get the 4th seed, and Charlotte will finish with the 6th seed. And Miami will be in the 5th seed. That's what my prediction is. What about you?
Well, I do like the way it should work out. It should be.
It could finish. Atlanta could be the 6th seed.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
That's crazy.
The way it should be is Hawks 3, Boston 4. Heat 5 and the Hornets 6th. However, I could see it swapping out, which really doesn't matter because Boston and Miami, whether they're 4 or 5, will play each other anyway.
Yeah, all 3 of those. I mean, all 4 of those teams could nearly finish with identical records if the Heat and the Celtics didn't play each other. They could finish all with identical records, but if the Heat and the Celtics play each other, so that will happen.
So, Clay, one team that is in the East who will not be making a trip to the playoffs this year for the first time in 8 seasons is the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
And it's been a very disappointing season. They've had injury with Joakim Noah. Derrick Rose has not been the same. And it's been a weird season for the Bulls. Of course, the first year without Tom Thibodeau, then under Fred Hoiberg, And it's come to fruition, Clay, that we may be looking at a different roster by the time the season starts back up next year for the Bulls.
That's what the rumors are, yeah.
We already know one guy who's on his way out, who basically has one foot out the door, and that's Pau Gasol. He's a guy coming down to the end of his career. He's going to be a free agent. You would think he'd want to sign somewhere that has a legit chance to be one of the top powers in their conference next year and contend for a title. The really interesting thing is we're looking at possibly the Bulls making moves to either get rid of Derrick Rose or get rid of Jimmy Butler.
Wow. I would.
Which one do you keep?
It'd be hard to get rid of Rose, but at the same time, I think Butler is. I mean, Derrick Rose, like you mentioned, is not the player he once was. I don't know. I think I would probably keep Butler.
However, if you keep Butler and you trade Derrick Rose, you don't get as much back as you would with Butler. Butler's a better player, and his value would say that in the trade market. But you wouldn't get – that's sad that you – going back a few years ago, you would think you would never trade Derrick Rose in a heartbeat. And
right.
Now you look at him, he may not be worth that much.
Yeah.
It'd have to be a team like Philadelphia, Sacramento, you know, people like that who are just out for a name to drive people to the stadium.
Let's see. I'm going to try and find Derrick Rose's stats. See how. Obviously, coming off injury like he was. And he's actually shut down for the last 2 games here, which doesn't matter because they're not making the playoffs or anything.
Right.
Played almost 32 minutes a game. He's still averaged 16 and a half a game. Four assists. So. He still obviously brings the versatility and value to a team, but he's just, as you mentioned, he's not the player he once was, but he's still a lot of teams would like to have him. You know, I think they should. Well, I think what he might do is maybe move him to like a six-man role and have him come off the bench and be more of a scoring guard.
Would you bench Derrick Rose?
Well, I mean, he'd still get good minutes, but. You know, he's 6'3". He's got pretty good size. I think he'd be a pretty good combo, you know, combo scoring type guard. But you'd always have to get somebody to fill his void at the point.
And so, you gotta hope that D Rose is okay with that too, coming off the bench.
Well, yeah.
You know, not everybody's Andre Iguodala, who could start his whole career and then come off the bench and win a championship.
Well. Like I said, I mean, he might not be fine with that. He's still, you know, relatively young. He's 27 years old. Yeah, he might not be fine with that. He might be. I'm not sure it would be up for them to decide, I guess. But I mean, could be a six man pack role. Still get big minutes, you know. You know, a six man on the team is basically another starter. You know, but I don't know. That's just an idea. So I think he's still a pretty good scorer.
Let me ask you this. If you're the GM of the Bulls and do you make changes? Do you blow up the team? Do you try to sign everybody back? What's your mindset going into this offseason to prepare yourself for the next season?
They've got a lot of good pieces. I think they're just a few pieces away.
You know, what one piece that they – what would make this team relevant again, the one piece they're missing?
What's that?
Tom Thibodeau.
Well, yeah.
This guy's been laughing it up all year. He won't say that, of course, but, I mean, how could you not? Your team, who you poured your heart and soul into and your voice into, because he lost his voice by the first quarter of every game. And then they fire you for not being good enough, and then they miss the playoffs the first year without you. He's going to go somewhere great and get a really great coaching game. Not saying the Bulls aren't, but he's going to get a really good offer this year, as many teams looking for a new head coach. And yeah. I hope that the new GM, or wherever he's at, will give him enough time and the key components he needs to actually give a good run. And because he's a really great coach, and he's going to be missed like he already is in Chicago for years.
Yeah, he is. But back to your question, I think you know, they can upgrade Gasol's spot, upgrade on the wing. You know, they got Mike Dunleavy, Doug McDermott, two smart. Pretty good players that spot could be upgraded. They might decide to keep Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, if they can keep both, I think they should probably try and keep both. But I don't know. Would you keep both of those? Do you think, you know, it's just been a strange year for Chicago. I don't know. Do they need to keep both those guys?
I think they need to get rid of Rose.
Yeah.
That's a tough decision for any GM to make, and of course, I'm not a GM. I would love to be. I mean, just if there was any team that would just give me the keys to their organization, I would take it. But it'd be tough. There's going to be teams interested in Derrick Rose. Okay, it's going to be interesting to see what they offer because his value won't be as great as it would be 3-4 years ago.
Oh,
but you could still get a good, you know, maybe 3-player deal out of it with 2 players and a draft pick. I think it's worth it. I think Jimmy Butler, you'd be crazy to trade Jimmy Butler from the Bulls. He is your next wave for the next, you know, foreseeable future. He needs to be the guy on your team. He's like Kawhi Leonard for the Bulls, basically. He's not as good as Kawhi Leonard, but he is that guy for the Bulls.
I see. Yeah. I agree. I think that's probably who.
And you look at it, Chicago is one of the best markets when it comes to free agency. You let Pau Gasol go. You maybe even let – it's tough to think if you let go of Joakim Noah or not. It's tough. I would maybe consider it. There's a few other guys I'd move here and there, but you have a ton of money you could save up for the next 2 years to go out and get free agents or get draft picks, and you could do this thing right in 2 years, be back in the top of the East.
It can be done. They got a lot of good pieces. Some young players that I like. I like Doug McDermott. I think he could be a really good player, and I definitely like I like Bobby Portis out of Arkansas. I don't know how much of a role he plays on the team, but I think he's a good young player.
He's playing a lot more last 25 games or so.
Josh Gibson, obviously, he's still pretty young. So they got a lot of good pieces.
They do. Aaron Brooks, another good backup guy. They're actually pretty young. You mentioned Doug McDermott. He's another guy who should be getting more minutes, in my opinion. I watched him play. Reminds me a lot of Kyle Korver. It's a guy who should be out there more.
Great college player from Creighton.
That's right. I mean, that's a guy, like I mentioned, he should be getting more playing time. You would think Fred Hoiberg would succeed to that and let him get more minutes. We'll see what happens in the offseason. I think the Bulls are going to look a little bit different going into next year, though.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. They got to make some changes. After missing the playoffs, changes will be made for sure.
So, Clay, a kind of awkward topic to bring up. We're not really sure. You know, this guy was a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. He's been in and out of rehab. He was then released from the Browns and is now a free agent. And Johnny Football has turned into Johnny Hobo. And he actually made more headlines this past week when he was caught on film by TMZ, and it did not go well.
Super Bowl MVP, Von Miller, my brother. I'm living with him right now. We're getting our life together.
So the Broncos, John Elway, great dude.
Yeah.
Kubiak, Aggie, my man. Listen, great organization. Anywhere I get picked up, bro, it's a blessing.
You're going to get picked up somewhere.
Somewhere, bro. Listen, whatever happens, I love ball. I want to play. That's the team I want to go to.
Do you think they care if you're partying a little bit? Is there anything wrong with that?
Partying? I don't think there's anything wrong with partying, bro.
Yeah.
There's a difference between partying and being out of control.
Yeah, you're not getting in trouble for anything.
And you've seen me here how many nights in a row? 5, 6?
A lot of times, yeah.
Exactly.
Where do you want to go?
What have we been doing since we've been here? Walking out, being chill, being cool with y'all. I'm cool. Drunk.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not drunk, man. We're just hanging out, enjoying great food. My guy John Tazarian is here. Let's do it.
I'm cool. I'm not drunk. Johnny Manziel, quote.
He was buzzing, but he wasn't. I don't know if he was drunk, but
What do you take away from this right here?
It's interesting. It makes you think. You know, are the Broncos really interested? I think they probably are. To be honest with you, they don't really have many other options right now unless they want to draft a guy.
Has to be a lot better options than this guy.
Man, what a great player he was in college, though. Ain't it just a shame? I don't know. I'd like to hear Von Miller's response. I don't know if he's
Well, he has come out with a response. He said that Johnny Manziel is not living with him.
That's what I thought I heard, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. He said he's not living with him. He is going to support him and try to get him back on an NFL team. If it is with the Broncos, cool, but he's not going to put himself out on the limb because he knows the guys in the front office make decisions each and every day to make this team better. So he's going to leave it up to them, but at the same time, he's going to support his guy, former teammate at Texas A&M.
Former Aggie.
Aggie.
He just wants to play ball, man. He loves ball. I don't know about Johnny. I think he needs a year away from the game.
It's one thing to party, and it's one thing to be out of control. Okay.
Well, you look at Joe Namath. You look at all these guys. You know, there's guys that like to have a good time. There's nothing wrong with having a good time every now and then. But if you want to be a franchise quarterback, if you want to be a great player, you're going to have to make some sacrifices. And when your father comes out and says, if he doesn't change, he's not going to see his 25th birthday or 20 whatever his dad said. It was something like that. I mean, it's a pretty crazy statement. I don't know. It's concerning, alcohol,
Uh-oh. Clay?
Draw my phone. I've been drinking.
Last thing we heard from Clay was alcohol, and then bam.
Alcohol is, a drink or two every now and then, there's nothing wrong with that, but, it's walking a fine line, Johnny's walking a fine line, and it's not something you need to mess around with, if you want to get your life in order. And it's a little discouraging.
Yeah.
But like I said, he just needs some time. I think he needs some time away from the game. I think he needs a year away from the game.
Well, if he's going out to clubs and doing all this while he's on a team and a roster, could you imagine what he would do as a free agent all year long when he's not having to be for a team? He wouldn't survive.
Well, maybe he'd say, maybe I should quit doing this over and over again. I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So maybe he would say, maybe I shouldn't do this over and over and over again because it's not, the results are not good.
And it's come out since then that Johnny Manziel has been living with ex-teammate Josh Gordon, who we all know has had trouble with a few things with the Browns. So the last couple of years being suspended for failing drug tests multiple times. Actually failed another one this past week that was really key to his being reinstated into the NFL. And it's not going to bode well for him possibly getting back. He could possibly be done for his career. It's up to the NFL committee to decide that.
Are you talking about Josh Gordon? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Josh Gordon.
My phone was going off there. Cut you out there. That's not a good thing. I don't. Is that who he's living with now? Or supposedly?
That's what the report is. He's living with Josh Gordon. And there's a lot of cool memes out there because now you have, stepbrothers pictures with Manziel and Josh Gordon, or you have Pineapple Express pictures with Manziel and Gordon.
That's more like it.
Yeah.
Josh Gordon says he wants to play in the league. He's going to have to, go by the league's rules. And the league's rules is, you can't have any, fail a drug test for marijuana. And he's failed multiple drug tests for marijuana. I actually think this last test was diluted, which the reason why he failed is because it was diluted. So, which obviously means he was hiding something. If you want to play in the NFL, you got to play by the rules. I mean, it may be legal in some states, but, it's still against the rules. You got to play by the rules. I mean, cry me a river. weed is the greatest thing on earth, if you ask some people, but, you're getting paid millions of dollars.
Clay,
you ain't got to smoke weed. You don't have to have it to survive. It ain't like food. It ain't like air. You don't have to have it to survive.
We certainly hope they both are able to recover somewhat because you want them to be, get back on the right road and the right path when it comes to being a person. Joining a team in the NFL, getting paid millions of dollars should be not as the front of their minds that they can't even get past, you know, as Johnny Manziel said right there, he's been in there like 5 or 6 days straight in L.A. going to clubs and partying. But, Clay, I have a couple of quick questions for you before we close up shop here on the show. What do you think about NBA? There's been a thing out there today where NBA is possibly going to pass a proposal to add ads to the jerseys of NBA players for the 2017-2018 season.
It's not NASCAR, you know. It's not like there's a ton of room. I don't like it. Not at all. Just not a fan of it. Just rubs me the wrong way.
Well, I'm not a big fan either. It's not going to be a huge advertisement. Like, it's not going to take up the whole jersey. It's going to be a little emblem.
Maybe during the preseason or during practice, you know, during an exhibition, summer work. You know, the NFL does it in, like, training camp and stuff on their practice jerseys. They'll have, you know, Hawaiian bread advertisement or whatever on the you know, their upper left shoulder on their left shoulder pad or something, you know. But, you know, not during the regular season. I don't like it at all. Looks tacky to me. Looks very tacky.
Yeah,
looks
not like a big fan either. Apparently it's gonna go through. Unanimous vote's gonna be passed, sounds like. And that's going to be really interesting because that's going to bring in more revenue for the NBA because more advertisements out there. It's something that's going to help the salary cap go up possibly another 3 years, go up some more money because then we've got the new TV deal for the next 2 years, and now we're going to have more money possibly coming in with the new advertisements on the jerseys.
More money, more problems is what Michael Scott used to say.
That's right. And Clay, I just want to talk a little bit about Kobe Bryant. This is a guy who has been playing in the league ever since, you know, we've been little and watching basketball. His unbelievable 20-year career is coming down to an end. Tomorrow night's his final game. It's fitting that it's in Staples Center. Just tell me what you think about Kobe Bryant going out.
Well, obviously, into a great career, you know, straight out of high school. Near Philadelphia, I think he grew up a Pacers fan, which we were just talking about earlier in the show. You know, one more piece, he's a great guy. Well, that's kind of questionable to some people, but a great player, and I think he is a pretty good guy. He's a competitor, you know. He rubs some people the wrong way, and you know he's had some off the court problems, but I don't think he's a bad guy. You know, at the end of the day, I think he might have a little bit of an ego. But anyways, aside from his personal things, he's a great player. You know, I always remember him, you know, growing up. He's, you know, in his prime. And he's still a pretty dang good player. But definitely in his prime when I was growing up, him and Shaq, you know, that was the thing. You know, when they were making their runs back in the day, that's what really got me like in sports, like in NBA. I always remember Kobe, that's for sure.
That's right. Going back, and there's very few players, Clay, that are still in the league when we were little watching, first getting into the game.
Yeah. I seen a post on Facebook that had it was a video game of Kobe's rookie year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I
saw it on Facebook today.
How far technology's come since he's been in the league. Crazy.
Basically just a block here and there of his arms and his head. And now yeah. It's got, you know, it's so he got that Kobe smoldering look that he has out there in the court where he's about to give somebody the snake eye, the Mamba eye, if you will. You know, it's crazy how far that technology's come since he's been in the league. And it's going to be sad to see him go. Going to be torn between watching that game or actually staying up in general to watch that game, watch the Warriors go for 73. We'll certainly talk about that next week on the Sports Report. And we'll talk about the NBA playoffs because they'll be underway next week as well.
Well, it's a good thing that God created DVR so we can just watch everything on our own time.
I know. I love and hate that because at the same time, I'm a guy that looks 30 years in the future and I'm talking to, you know, grandkids or kids, whatever, saying, you know what, I remember staying up at midnight watching the Golden State Warriors win 73 games. That'll never be done again. And then 30 years later, we'll have the 76ers go out for 74 wins.
It's possible. I go to Golden State was bad for years and years and years.
That's right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about it.
That's a wrap. That's going to do it here for today's Sports Report podcast with Brad and Clay here on TKLNRadio.com and TIRN Sports. Next week, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs. We have more baseball coming up for you guys as well, and we're getting 1 week closer to the NFL draft. It is April 28th, 16 days away from today. Clay will have his mock draft somewhat ready, I think, by that time. We'll throw out some draft ideas here and there. We'll get everyone pumped for some more football. And we'll also have some news about Alabama's A-Day that's this weekend. We'll have some news about that as well. Clay, thank you so much for joining the show with me as usual.
Hey, no problem. I appreciate it.
Remember, you can check out replays of each show on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Audio Boom. And remember to check us out on Facebook and Twitter as well at The Sports Report. We'll see you guys next week for our new Sports Report podcast. Have a great week, everybody.